Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, author, mindfulness teacher, and wellness coach.
And I'm Tessa Tovar, producer, co-host, and your partner in Real Talk for all things wellness and beyond.
Welcome to the Radically Well podcast. This is a space where we break down the messy, transformative moments that make us who we are, because wellness isn't about perfection. It's about embracing the journey.
Every week, we'll tackle the topics no one talks about, but everyone needs to hear, like navigating hormones, aging, relationships, sex, and self-care.
You'll hear unfiltered stories, expert advice, and real, relatable conversations that empower you to reset your mindset, reimagine your health, and show up as your most authentic self. Whether you're here to learn, laugh, or maybe cry a little, this is your space to feel seen, supported, and inspired to live radically well.
So grab your favorite tea or, hey, maybe a glass of wine, and let's dive in.
Let's get radically well. Well, everybody, welcome to the Radically Well podcast. I'm Rosie.
And I'm Tessa.
Yay. So we've been on hiatus, obviously. We've been just living life and gearing up for season two of the podcast.
Yeah, I'm super excited for season two. And we just wanted to pop in today with something a little extra special for the next week, because as Rosie said, we are gearing up, which means if you guys only knew the prep work that goes into podcasting, oh my God. It's a labor of love, and we do love it. We do love it.
You know, somebody did ask, they're like, who's your production team? And I love when people ask. She laughs. She's like, it's me. Yeah. And me.
Yeah.
And me. And this is it. You know, and obviously we have Sapphiris Media, which is Jess.
Yes.
Jess is our videographer and she's amazing.
I love her. She's just the best.
Yeah. So continue. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Know.
I just think it's funny.
No. I think that's a great thing to note. But I'm so excited for season two. But in the meantime, we do have a little mini series. It's going to feature some of our favorite guests from season one. These are moments that just really made us pause and reflect and laugh or say wow out loud. And like I've said before, I've said this on the podcast before, I do go back and listen because I am editing and I'm making sure it's polished and ready to go. And I always learn something new when I re-listen. I love it.
Yeah. And for me, the same. I love to be able to re-listen when we do get those final cuts and, you know, everything's put together so perfectly. And I do sometimes want to re-listen. And I think this is why we're creating these sort of mini, I don't know, what are we calling it? Mini series?
Yeah, let's call it a mini series. Well, I keep saying recast, but
Yeah. Well, it's like a recast of, you know, some of the most powerful parts of the conversations that we've had and obviously the feedback that we've received from people. Sometimes for me, I know when I listen to a really great podcast and then I want to go back and re-listen, maybe I don't remember exactly where that portion was or what number podcast. And so it's really cool to be able to just listen to a recast like this. And also all 12 episodes of the season of season one is available now. So you can go back and take a listen. You can binge every single episode entirely. And yeah, we hope that you feel re-inspired and maybe you even see things in a new light.
Yeah. Oh, we loved season one so much and we're so excited to share these standout moments with you. So sit back, get cozy, and enjoy this special rewind series on the Radically Well podcast.
For anyone in a relationship is, okay, so let's say, for example, we take out the always and the never.
Okay.
How do we have a fight? I mean, what is, because I think anger and fighting with your partner, there's a certain level of passion.
Yeah.
It's an important part of a relationship, in my opinion.
Maybe it's what turns you on.
And it's, I think, to an extent, healthy, you know, like depending on the fight and how you're doing it, is it fair? I don't know if I could define that right now. But this isn't to say that I can't have a fight without saying always and never. I think we can. But I'm just wondering about, like, if we're always coming into that communication with the calmness and the zen, is that the goal? Or can we have the outsized reaction? Can we have our feelings come up in communication with our partner and have it be charged and have it be heavy and have it be really big in a healthy way?
That's a really great statement question. I don't know. Is that a question?
It's a statement question.
Statement question?
Yeah.
I feel like yes. And I'm going to say yes, question mark.
I think what I'm learning about this, though, sorry not to interrupt you,
please.
Is that, and now I'm asking about this because I'm thinking back to something that happened, and I think I shared this on an earlier episode, or maybe I was just talking to you, about a reaction I had where I just raged. And Jorge, who's a fixer and he's a protector and he always wants to, without being asked, come in and take charge of the situation and fix it for me. I didn't want him to do that. I wanted to just vent, right? So he came into my office. I was trying to do something on my computer. He kind of like moved me out of the way. And then I tried to do something at my desk and I got an error message from my computer and I just fucking lost it. I just started pounding on my desk. I started screaming in his face, bloody murder scream. I mean, it was not a gentle, quiet scream. I wasn't even verbal at that point. It was just like, like literally the exorcist was happening. And he took me by the shoulders and he was like, you can't scream like that. I'm a Latino. Like, people are going to think I'm
hurting you.
Yeah. And I kind of that made me stop for a second. I was like, oh, I didn't think about it from that perspective. I stopped for a second and then I screamed again in his face. And then I got it out of my system. He stopped trying to fix things. And I said very quietly and calmly, I need to be alone right now. You need to leave. And I repeated myself until he left. And then all of this processing happens after a situation like that, right? It's like, where did that come from? Who was that person?
You're processing it yourself. Okay.
This is my mental conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I would prevent myself from doing that again.
Yeah.
Is what I feel like right now, going through perimenopause and EMDR, felt like that was kind of the combination of these things that are happening simultaneously in my life.
Yeah, I don't know that you're asking me to answer that, but I kind of want to
answer
it.
Would you like to? Because I'd love to hear what you'd have to say.
Yeah, well, I feel like you're absolutely right. And I would say, just from a human emotion perspective, I think all feelings are valid. And I think that being able to express yourself in that way, I mean, some people might say, oh, there are better ways than yelling at your partner like a banshee, like I've done, you know? Yeah. And I think that of course, there are better ways, but I feel like also what is not expressed is depressed.
Yeah.
I really feel like allowing ourselves to have those big feelings and those big emotions is just a part of this process, especially when you're in perimenopause and menopause, because your system is going through some major changes, like physiological, chemical, scientifically proven changes. And so there has to be some grace from your partner. And it's not like my big thing with in my relationship is my partner will tolerate no disrespect. And I'm down with that. Like, I do not ever want to disrespect him in any way. I may get really close to that line. I may toe the line occasionally and just kind of tap the line with my toe. Maybe I put one little finger over the line occasionally, but I think it's also just part of human nature and being with somebody for a long period of time. You know exactly what to say to get them going. Yeah. And it's like the fuse over time is a lot shorter and the combustion is a lot grander, bigger. And so I think it's just par for the course when you're in a long-term relationship. And so to really, again, allow yourself the space to have those reactions. I think what we do a lot of the time going into this whole thing, we've had this conversation before about like gaslighting ourselves when we're talking about going to the doctor's office and not, you know, asking the questions or telling yourself that you're fine or that you should be, you should all over yourself, or I'm a meditation teacher, I'm in the world of wellness, I need to have this figured out, or I need to not be reactive. You know, I think we're human, and especially as women, knowing that every single woman is going to go through this process, I think really giving yourself the grace. Like I have so much, again, being on the other side now, I have just an enormous amount. I have so much compassion and just so much empathy that we've changed this entire show to be about just this, because I really want to have these conversations. I want us to be able to have other women feel seen and heard. I want us to be able to talk to our partners about what we're going through.
That's my question.
Yeah.
How do we have... I keep trying to have this conversation with Jorge about, hey, I'm going through perimenopause. Also, I'm doing EMDR. Guess what this means about how I feel in my body? There's going to be times where I'm going to have these outsized reactions and I need you to do X, Y, and Z. I'm not sure what that is yet. If you could go back in time or offer advice to us going through it or looking forward to going through it, what is there anything you would have done differently? Is there anything you would suggest we try to say to our partner?
Well, wow. I think when I was navigating at the time, I didn't have anybody to talk to about it.
Yeah.
So at least the
front runner.
Yeah. Like
you're holding the torch.
Yeah. I was feeling really alone and like I was going nuts. You know, I really did feel like I was losing my mind. Mm-hmm. It felt like, wow, who am I? Like, mm-hmm. What is this world? What am I doing here? Why am I here? What is the purpose of all of this? And I could just see the frustration in Tori's face. And my biggest like pet peeve of him is like, again, just a little background. I grew up in East LA in a really chaotic environment, gang violence. You know, there was addiction in my family, you know, some domestic abuse in there. Like there was a lot of obstacles that I navigated the first 15 years of my life, right? I like to consider myself somebody that is a thriver and I'm like a go-getter, you know? Like I'm not a victim. I definitely don't see myself in that way at all. I am fucking strong and I'm tough. Like, I know I'm tough. I'm a tough person. So my biggest pet peeve is when anyone, and this is back when I was younger, for anybody to look at me with pity mm-hmm. or to feel sorry for me because, you know, of what I've been through or how I grew up or how I was raised, whatever, any of that, that kind of sort of othering, mm-hmm. that is my pet peeve. I'm like, no, treat me the same. Mm-hmm. I don't care that I'm a girl, like treat me the same. Mm-hmm. Or I don't care that I've been through X, Y, and Z, like treat me the same. Like give me equal treatment, you know? Like I'm just as capable as everybody else. I never want to feel othered, mm-hmm. right? That's like, so when going through this and Tori's watching me go through this like dark, depressive hole, this fuckery of fuck of menopause, perimenopause, the way he would look at me with like pity, you know, like he would look at me with just like so much, like he felt bad for me and I could see it in his eyes and it would piss me off because it's like, don't feel bad for me, you know, like don't pity me, you know, because it makes me feel like something's wrong, you know. But looking back now, he just wanted to understand, and he just felt bad that he couldn't help me. Mm-hmm. He felt that here's a person that he loves the most, and there's nothing that he can do or say to make what I was going through better. Mm-hmm. And he tried and he did. But I think if I could go back in time, if I could go back in time to the communication component, how to communicate with your partner during this time, I would just communicate that you feel like you have no footing and you're navigating blindly with no direction of where to go and how to feel. And you feel like exactly what you described. You've got cement on your feet. Fucking, you see the tidal wave, you see the tsunami coming. You're like, I'm going to fucking just stand here and take it.
Yeah.
You just express how you feel. And you also express the fact that their job is to just help hold you up.
I love that. Yeah.
I decided that I had to do something because I wasn't getting the roles that I wanted. It was always,
you know, this or that.
This or that. And I'm like, we are so much more than that. You know, o sea, Latinas, we are so much more than that. We're not only this or that, you know. So, and on the other hand, well, I had a little problem back then with the chapel, the whole thing, the chapel, chapel problem, or whatever, however you want to call it.
Yeah, it was a situation which, by the way, was so shitty because I remember when Tori and I, we watched the documentary and I was just like, why is it that Kate is the one that's getting fucked over here? It's clear. It was very clear. It was a very black and white experience.
It was.
And it's like, and the guy involved.
The guys, there were three.
Okay, the men that are involved. Nothing seemed to happen to them, really. And it's like, you got persecuted for this in so many ways, right?
In so many, I couldn't go back to my country for, I don't know, 3 years.
Yeah, because you were under investigation, right?
Yes, or something. No, they would arrest me. I have an order of arrest in Mexico. It was horrible. I mean, that's a whole new thing. If you want to know more, watch the documentary on Netflix, The Day I Met El Chapo, is called. It's a very interesting thing because it's just so unfair, everything that happened. And I still, and then somebody told me I was collateral damage. And if something happened to me down there because I didn't have the thing that they did as journalists, I would have been collateral damage if they kill me. If they, and now I know that. This is a whole other story. I have to do another documentary about that, but about the things that I know right now, because back then it was an ongoing investigation and I was still very afraid and I still didn't know exactly what was going to happen to me. But now that I know, there's so much info there that. But at the end of the day, I only can say that I was literally collateral damage. So, so that happened. I couldn't work. Nobody wanted to work with me. My insurance, you know, in the industry, like by SAG and everything, went up, of course, and because they didn't know if they were going to take me or not. So nobody wanted to give me a job, and. So that happened, and that's why I was like, oh my God, I need to create my own thing because I don't know. I don't know how to do anything else. I've been an actress for my entire life. My dad is an actor. We don't have any other business. We have no other business. Like, that's all we have done, you know? So I need to do it by myself. I'm not going to wait for anybody to call me or anything. So we created, my friends and I, because my partners we're investigated too. We're like, they're my friends from many years. And we're very smart women, you know, that we know about the industry. We've been in the industry for years. And we're like, why are we sitting here? Just wait. We have to do something. And they grew up in East LA. Yes, I know. I know. So they grew up in East LA and they're very, very proud of it. I grew up in Mexico and they say, and I say, Mis Cholas. And they say, no, you are the la Chola Grande, you know? And I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. I'm happy to be because, and we named it Chola Wood because I think sometimes Cholas get I don't know if a wrong connotation, like yeah. a bad connotation, like it was something that, and I think they're very amazing women, resilient, and they have to live in this neighborhood, yeah. you know, which is and no one better than you knows. And to be who you are right now, I think, I mean, you should be part of La Cholas. Jump me in.
Yes. I'm in.
Yes, you know, so we've been struggling for many years and it's always a struggle. You know, everybody thinks that I'm a very, you know, I don't know that I do. I cannot complain. Of course, I don't complain, but it's been hard. It's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't take anything for granted. But this is
sort of like my point, and it's actually something I didn't know that it would come up or not. But like my point in saying that you've done so much. Like I literally grew up watching your novelas, like, and I've seen your career and like, I'm a fan. Everything you do has such depth. And even with like, these roles are what you're getting, you know, booking, you still have such a grand tapestry of incredible work. Like, why is it then that it's like, you're having this conversation about like, I still have to work this hard, even at the place you are in your career, with your experience, with everything that you've done, with your following, with your fans, and you're still like, I have to create something for myself.
Yes.
I have to build something because this industry is not set up to support somebody like me.
Absolutely. And I have to work harder. As you know, not only because I'm a woman,
yeah,
but because I'm Latina. You know, I mean, it's crazy, yeah. but we do. It's exhausting. I'm yeah. exhausted. I don't know about any.
Oh my God, no,
you, but I think I'm really exhausted. I wish I could have, you know, a day that I don't go, oh my God, what's coming next? Is this and that? What am I going to do tomorrow? What and that? Like that is like, hell, oh, of course my hair is falling. Hell yeah. Of course I have vertigo and all these stupid things. That's why it's just yeah. probably it's only tension. I have no idea, but it keeps me going. Yeah. And I'm very happy about whatever I've done since I came here. And I'm very proud of what I've done and my decisions, you know, and I love it. It's just not easy.
Yeah.
And probably that's why I love it more. Because yeah. it tastes better when it's hard to get.
Yeah. I'm all about the sort of working for it. I know that look, you asked earlier when we started chatting, you're like, how long have you been doing this? And I'm like, I've been doing it for 10 years. And it feels like every other day I'm reading articles about people that just started 6 years ago and they're getting like $120 million deals on Sirius. And I'm just like, what? How? And look, I'm not them. They're not me.
Absolutely. And there's everything for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, there's jobs sure. for everybody. And that's fine. It's like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
What is it that it's, is it me? Is it just start questioning yourself so many things?
Yeah.
Why? I'm talking about amazing things that I would listen to my podcast. You know, it's like, what am I doing wrong? And to be honest, I think I don't have a response, an answer for that, but I think because there's only or mostly white men in las cabezas, you know, mm-hmm, head mm-hmm. of all this,
yeah.
you know, that they are in charge of the narrative.
Yeah. Well, it's like all the top, you know, even just like in film or even in just the world of podcasts, like say, you know, this, I'm really focused right now on doing, you know, having these conversations. It's very female centric. You know, I think it's a very important conversation to have. And even looking at, you know, the top podcasts in health or in culture, and it's all men. And it's like, and some of these people are my friends and I've known for many years, and it's not a slag on them. But then you look at the majority of the demographic that's consuming them, and it's mostly women, you mm-hmm. know? So it's like, why aren't we then supporting each other in this space too, right? So then there's also that. There's so many components where it's like, okay, I'm looking at the industry and what's happening. How can I then uplift my fellow woman, Latina, women of color? Like, how can we then work as a unit to help support each other's art, right? I don't know.
I wish I have an answer for that, you know, because I've been trying to. And I think we need to, we need more women. And I'm, first step, women. Second step, Latinas.
Yeah.
You know, in these positions. Because only like that we can change narratives. It's like, for me, it's like with an agency or a manager, it's like, okay, no, yes, I'm Latina, but you can, I can do whatever. I can be whoever.
Yeah.
You know, do not put me in that box go and meet this Latino. And I don't need to meet more Latinos. I know my Latinos friends. I know them all. They all know me. That's why I'm here, to know somebody who's not Latino, you know? And I want to tell story, because with my company, it's always like, okay, so what Latino story do you have for us? And I'm like, no, I don't have Latino stories for you. I have amazing, fucking great stories for you, which happen to be told by a Latina, you know? Or, I'm not playing characters in all my things, but, produced by Latinas.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it has to be a Latino or something.
Yeah.
Because then you're stereotyping yourself. Yeah. And it's not right. But it's every day we have these meetings, Zoom meetings or whatever meetings. They're mostly men that we need to explain ourselves why. And especially, you know what? I was not going to go there, but I will.
Let's do it.
Women my age. Forget it. Of course, it's not sexy to say I have 50. I think, or 52. I think it's super sexy to be 52 and feeling like I feel. I don't know how I look, but I feel super bien.
You look hot.
You know what I mean? It's like, why is not sexy for you, asshole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if and I'm not looking to your approval.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not sexy being menopausica. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, but I am. And I tell it out loud, always. Yes, I say it out loud, my age, and that I'm in, please open the doors because I'm having hot flashes. Anybody has a problem with that? Sorry. You know? It's like, come on, how old are you?
Yeah, and that's, I think, part of the, what I need, I think needs to be a part of the conversation is like this idea of taking up space and arriving and just commanding that presence of, okay, this is who I am, this is my story, and this is what I have to say, and I have a voice, and my voice matters.
Absolutely.
You know?
And everybody's voice matters. It's just, for us, it's been very hard. And again, I'm not complaining, I'm just saying it should be different, a little bit different now. Because this was okay 25 years ago when I got to here, you know? But now, are you kidding? Nothing has changed.
So nothing has changed. You don't think?
No, or very little. Very, very little. But I'm still getting those characters, you know, those roles of esto, el otro. And I'm like, you know how many, and de verdad, I have to reject, because this is, everything that they send me is narcotraficantes, you know, and I'm still working as one in a show, but you know, but it's different. At least it's a high end one,
right?
You know, at least
she
went to Harvard, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm getting bored.
Yeah.
Of course, if I wanted to work, I would be doing a lot of stuff. It's just, I have some dignity right now, and I have a long career. I can say no.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I've worked my entire life for.
Yeah. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Radically Well podcast. This podcast is produced by Rosie Acosta and Tessa Tovar. Production by Sapphiris Media. Music by Monogram Sound. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.